Hello and welcome to the American Magazine Podcast for the week of December 19th through 26th. This is our Christmas podcast, and we feature an interview with Reverend David Beckman, the head of Bread for the World and a Lutheran minister. Our interview was conducted by phone and recorded in his offices in Washington, D.C. Some of my questions have been re-recorded in order to improve the sound quality. I began by asking Reverend Beckman to describe the work of Bread for the World.
Bread for the World is a collective Christian voice for hungry people. So we organize among Catholics and all stripes of Protestants to help people lobby Congress for hungry and poor people in our country and around the world, and we make a big difference. We together with church bodies and a lot of good people across the country, almost every year we win very substantial changes for hungry and poor people from Congress. It's important to get our government to do its part. You know, you just can't food bank your way to the end of hunger. We've also got to get the government to provide help and opportunity to do its share of what needs to happen to reduce hunger and poverty in our country and around the world too.
Maybe you can give us some statistics. Starting in the United States, how many people are facing hunger on a daily basis?
The statistics that really grabs me is that one in four children under the age of five lives in a household that runs out of food sometimes. One in four children under the age of five. And we know that even moderate undernutrition does permanent damage to little children. So hunger is very widespread in our country, just inexcusably widespread. No other industrialized country puts up with widespread hunger the way we do.
And with the recession and the obvious difficult economic circumstances, are you seeing people you haven't seen before?
Yes, what's happened is that the recession has caused economic problems for almost everybody. And for people who are already poor and hungry or who are close to the line, it's clearly done a lot of damage. So people who had a job or had a part-time job have lost that, or now they've got a part-time job. People who were helping out at a soup kitchen are now in line. A lot of people have had to get their kids on subsidized lunch at school, apply for food stamps, apply for various kinds of government assistance. So the economy has been really tough on a lot of poor people, and also people who were just hanging tough above the poverty line and aren't making it anymore.
Now, you mentioned earlier the lobbying you do for Congress. This seems like a particularly difficult time to make your case with budget cuts, etc. Is that the case?
It has been a difficult time, but in fact, I'm really encouraged right now, because in March, the faith community, especially Christians of all stripes, got organized together to say, look, we can reduce our budget deficit without making families who are having a hard time feeding their kids, making life yet tougher for them. And so, actually led by the Catholic Conference of Bishops, with Bread for the World playing a really strong role, lots of church bodies, church groups. Then we were joined by Muslims and Jews and secular groups. We've been pushing for that they not cut the programs that are focused on poor people. They started out the year with the House voting to direct two-thirds of their proposed spending cuts to programs that go mainly to low-income people, which I just think was unconscionable. But in the end, Congress and the president really haven't made substantial cuts to the programs that are focused on poor people. They've agreed on $2 trillion in spending cuts. But when the legislation in August that set up the supercommittee now mandates across-the-board cuts in all government programs, we were able to secure bipartisan agreement that the main programs that are focused on poor and hungry people will be exempted from cuts. That's really wonderful news, and in this case, due mainly to people in the faith community, faith leaders, but also grassroots people across the country who contacted their own members of Congress and asked them to form a circle of protection around hungry and poor people. It's great news. It's gospel.
Now, you mentioned earlier the question of whether food banks could take on the load of feeding the hungry. As you no doubt know, this issue has come up in the Republican debates and the question of whether charities could, in fact, replace government. But it sounds like from what you describe, that would be very difficult to do.
Well, charities play are really important. They provide emergency assistance. I think almost every church in the country collects and distributes food to people in need. That's wonderful work, and it's important to who we are. But if you just look at food, all of the food that low-income families get from food banks and food pantries and churches, all of that food amounts to the equivalent of 6% of the food that low-income families get from the federal food programs. So that's SNAP, what used to be called WIC, or I'm sorry, SNAP used to be called food stamps, and then WIC, which is Women, Infants, and Children. It's a supplemental program for babies and pregnant women. And then the school meals programs. Those are 16 times the size of all the food charity in the country. So, I mean, just for example, the chairs and the ranking members of the agriculture committees are proposing in the farm bill that might move next year to cut food stamps by $4 billion. That's equivalent to doing away with a whole year of all the food charity that all the churches and food banks in the country are doing. You know, it probably wouldn't. It might not even make the newspapers, you know, a 6% cut in those programs. So people don't have a sense that as important as charity is for spiritual reasons and because it deals with people in an individual way and an emergency way, it's also just essential that people who care about justice for poor people weigh in with our government and make the government do what only it can do, and act on the scale that only it can act on to provide help and opportunity to poor people.
Maybe now we can switch to the international scene. Are there proposed cuts that would threaten the ability to fight hunger on the international scene?
Absolutely. When the House passed their agriculture, the House of Representatives passed their agriculture appropriations bill in May, they voted for cuts in both WIC nutrition assistance to little kids in this country and international food aid. Their bill would have thrown 300,000 children and mothers off WIC nutrition assistance. And just outrageously, they would have stopped food aid rations for 14 million of the world's most desperate people. This is, you know, we were watching what's going on in Somalia and the surrounding countries, and the House voted to throw 14 million people off food aid rations this year. What's exciting to me is that Bread for the World, the Catholic Church, other churches and faith groups really protested those cuts, and we had a meeting with President Obama, a face-to-face meeting, and raised this issue. We had a meeting with Paul Ryan, chairman of the Budget Committee in the House. He's a good Catholic. You know, although these cuts were in line with his budget, I think he could see that this wasn't the right thing to do, and met with Boehner's staff, Boehner is also a Catholic, and I think in Boehner's office they were also uneasy about the cut to food aid in particular. And so when the final ag appropriations bill went through about 2 weeks ago, I'm really gratified that Congress they backed away from those cuts in both WIC and international food aid. Right now, they're finalizing most of the appropriations for the current fiscal year. And the international development programs, things like aid to farmers to help farmers in Africa be more productive, or the money for malaria bed nets or AIDS medications, those development programs are very much at risk. We don't know how that's going to turn out. I'm pleased that there are some important Republican senators who've joined with us in arguing that Congress protect those international development programs. I think next year I'm really worried about the international development programs, because the way that the budget process is structured now, they'll be up against military spending in the appropriations process. And the lobbies that work to protect military spending are just huge and powerful. So these relatively tiny programs that are helping poor farmers in Africa and that sort of thing are very much at risk. It's important that Catholics and Protestants who understand God's special concern about people in need, that we continue to work for a circle of protection around programs focused on poor and hungry people in our own country and also all around the world.
Now, Europe, of course, has instituted its own austerity programs. I imagine that must have also affected international aid to Africa and other developing countries.
Yeah, I think it has, in fact. Although in the UK, where you have a conservative government in power, to their great credit, they've decided to continue to increase their development assistance because they just see it's ethically the right thing to do. It's important to their own security. How the Europeans and the Japanese, how they manage their international aid budgets depends a lot on U.S. leadership. If the U.S. as the leading power, in fact, doesn't even maintain its current level of funding for international aid programs, Germany and Japan and some of the other countries will follow suit. If in fact, we can manage our economic and budget difficulties without cutting international aid, I think the other countries may follow suit in that too. All of the international aid programs that have anything to do with poverty, so I'm not talking about embassies or aid to Israel, but the programs that are focused on development and poverty reduction, they all amount to 0.6% of the federal budget. You know, they're a rounding error. So in fact, we can maintain and increase what we're doing to reduce hunger and poverty around the world without having any significant impact on the fiscal deficit.
Now, we've been talking mostly about government aid, but there are, of course, private charities, which provide a lot of relief for people struggling abroad. Now, for the American audience who might be newer to perhaps ads you see on TV or on the internet for suffering children, is there a way to connect so we can reach out to these people in a fruitful way? And also, is there a way to ensure that, you know, the money that you're given is going to the right people and not to perhaps a corrupt government official?
I think Catholic Relief Services is a great agency. So that's the, you know, a main instrument for Catholics. I've seen what they do on the ground in developing countries. They do excellent work. And in fact, I think my impression is that almost all of the well-established agencies that, you know, agencies that you've heard about for years, like Oxfam and CARE and Save the Children and Church World Service, these agencies do good work. So I think people, you know, when you see some new agency pop up on television that you never heard about before, then you got to be careful and check out who's on the board and what have they done. But the tried and true agencies like Catholic Relief Services are doing great work. And they work in counterpoint with our government assistance programs. So CRS, for example, administers many aid programs that are funded by the U.S. government. So what you get is a combination of the government's ability to provide resources on a large scale with CRS's ability to connect with local people, connect with the Catholic Church in the country. I think they do a good job of following the priorities of Catholic leadership in each country, rather than coming in and inventing things you know, from Baltimore or someplace, something like that. So Americans, we have lots of channels to give, and it's important. Our charity needs to walk on 2 feet. There's the foot of direct assistance, but then we also need to keep our government engaged.
Now, we had a piece in our news section a few months back quoting you to the effect that you find Catholic social teaching to be an important resource. Maybe you can talk more about that.
Sure. I'm a Lutheran pastor, but Bread for the World works with lots of Catholic institutions, lots of Catholic people and parishes, as well as Protestants of all stripe. And I think Catholic social teaching is a tremendous resource for, certainly for all Christians, and more broadly. It is a tremendous ethical, spiritual resource for the world. One thing that makes it so good is that it is global. The Catholic Church is global, and it also is it's integrated over the decades. So because of the structure of the Catholic Church, you know, the bishops this decade can't ignore what the bishops in the 60s thought. You know, they can't. I mean, you don't follow the winds of opinion change the way individuals do. It's a corpus of global ethical reflection grounded in God and Christ, and so as a result, it is high quality. It's authoritative. It's it shows the all of the energy and thought that's been poured into it. And so, I pay attention to papal encyclicals more than most Catholics do, I'm sure. And I find some of the insights in Catholic social teaching very helpful for everybody. One thing I want to add is I think it's just become clear to me recently that, in fact, what we have done to protect the government programs that are focused on poor people is having some good impact among poor people. This is not just academic. When the U.S. government publishes data on hunger and food insecurity, and what those data show, they came out about a month ago, what they show is that hunger and food insecurity jumped up in 2008 when the financial crisis hit, especially among Latinos, because a lot of people, Latino people, worked in the construction industry, so you know they got really hit by unemployment. But among all racial groups, hunger and food insecurity increased in 2008. But then, what's wonderful, in fact, is that in 2009 and 2010, even though unemployment continued to go up, hunger did not go up, and food insecurity among little kids actually went down a notch. And the only way you can explain that is that some of the means-tested government programs expanded during this time of economic crisis. So during the recession, the number of kids getting subsidized school meals has gone up 19%. The food stamp program has expanded. Medicaid has expanded with increased need. And it's working. It's keeping hunger at bay. You know, a lot of people have been driven by unemployment to seek help from the local food bank and maybe to get their kids on reduced price lunch. So, you know, the impact on poor and near poor people has been severe. But I think charity has expanded. There's good evidence of that, a lot of churches are digging deeper and providing more help for their neighbors. And more importantly, actually, in terms of the impact on poor people, is that the government programs have not yet been cut, and they're working. It's also true, I think, internationally. What we think happened is that in 2008, the economy combined with high prices for basic grains like rice and wheat and corn, those are really important to poor people in developing countries because they spend most of their income on corn or rice, a family. When those prices went up and the economy tanked at the same time, the number of hungry people in the world now, undernourished people, people who don't get enough calories for their bodies to function, that number probably went up from about 850 million to over a billion in 2008. In 2009 and 2010, it dropped back to something like 900 million, which is still horrible, of course. But I think that's partly because of the dynamism within developing countries. Really, it's a wonderful thing that in over the last decades, many of the poorest countries, in fact, have been making progress, and that progress hasn't been entirely stalled. And then also, I think the U.S. government has provided important leadership. The Obama administration, especially in its first 2 years, really led the world in providing some additional help to hard-hit countries and focusing that help especially on agriculture and nutrition, since it was hunger that was especially the problem. And I think what Bread for the World and the Conference of Catholic Bishops and Catholic Relief Services have done to support and shape what our government is doing to support international development, in fact, has contributed to some encouraging results. Everybody's so depressed right now. It just seems like, so many things are not working and the economy remains vulnerable. But I'm encouraged, and especially encouraged, that our country has not slashed aid to the poorest people yet, that people of faith across the country, Catholics, but also all kinds of other folks, have weighed in to protect poor people against cuts, and that we can see real evidence that the programs that we fought for are really helping people on the ground.
Well, that's very helpful, Reverend Beckman. We want to thank you for taking a few minutes to talk with us and to remind our listeners that you can learn more about Bread for the World at bread.org.
Well, thank you a lot. If people want to get involved in Bread for the World, I think we are. Bread for the World offers really good, up-to-date information on what my senator and what my representative are doing, how they can be helpful. So if you've got, 10 minutes to write a letter to your member of Congress, being part of Bread for the World helps you get a real impact for that 10 minutes. And then also we've got really good resources for that can be used by parishes or Catholic groups to help the whole community become aware that the power we have as people who live in this country is something that we can steward, that we can give that citizen power, use that citizen power in ways that help to achieve what God's trying to do for hungry and poor people.